last week on the Tuesday night show, unbeknownst, unplanned by me, based on the crowd, we decided to go through what my trip the week before was to Poland without the kids and just really just graves and a lot of prayer. So I began the trip on a Thursday, and now we have it here written down in order. As I put on the camera, come on the camera.
Beautiful, yeah.
And at the beginning, I wrote what we did, who we went through and stuff. So really, we covered last week, what we call cover. We did Thursday, Friday, and now we're up to Matzah Shabbos, from where we are from last week. I'm continuing the story of how it goes. So it starts like this. So it starts out, we have one more left. I'll see you guys. Throwing my thing around. So, now Shabbos, how is it cracked out? We're going to go through a little bit more just because we're going to talk to somebody. Drevis, Akis, can I bother you to close those doors? Okay. Matzah Shabbos, up to what we did 2 weeks ago, Rupshitz. Now, I didn't go right to Rupshitz. I actually skipped something here because I didn't realize I forgot. Thank you, Keith. We were in Krakow on Shabbos, and then Matzah Shabbos, before we went anywhere, we went to Sarah Shnira, official grave. Sarah Shnira was an outside the box taker. There was no base apple system. Girls who studied at home, clean, the education was very limited, as we've discussed many times. So she decided to build, she realized that the system was becoming bad. Because they were having access, the girls having access to other stuff, and therefore it was becoming less religious, and therefore it was an issue. So she created a base apple system. Obviously, she needed major backing. A girl on her own in pre-war Europe decided to start a brand new system. It's not going to be easy. But thankfully, she got the Chavetz Chaim and the Ger Rebbe. They were controlling a lot of the area back then. They both agreed to her, and then the system began. She was buried in a cemetery in Krakow that was destroyed. It became actually a concentration camp. Plajow concentration camp, which I think was featured in the movie of
Schindler's List.
Right, in Schindler's List. Now, that cemetery was destroyed, but either they found an exact location or whatever they did, and now there's a monument there for her. So before we left Krakow, we went to her monument, and she passed away before the war.
What's her name?
Sarah Shnira.
Sarah Shnira.
Again, the inventor of the Bisyakov system. I mean, the entire system is built on her. It's actually extremely impressive. Took a lot of guts what she was doing. In fact, the famous legend, what's true, what's not true, that when she built the original Beis Yaakov building in Krakow was still there. It's actually a kosher place now. Might be a hotel also, but definitely a place to eat. We've been there a couple times. We went there this week on Shabbos, correct? And we've been there a couple times. And the legend is that she came with a bunch of rocks of people who had thrown rocks at her when she was starting the system. People were throwing rocks at her because that was a very outlandish move to do. And she took those rocks and saved them as the cornerstone who became the Beis Yaakov building, which is still there today. So that was much of Shabbos before we left. But really, it's just middle of nowhere. It's plaque and it's grave site.
Well, it's interesting that she called it Beis Yaakov, not Shnir.
Excellent. School. Now, the Beis Yaakov, the phrase is from the Chumash, where it says in Parshas Yisra about teaching the Jews, it says, Toymel the Beis Yaakov, Vayagel the Beis Bnei Yisrael. I forgot the exact question, but it says, teach Torah to the word says Beis Yaakov. Wouldn't the thing anything. Rashi says Beis Yaakov means the women. That's where it comes from. So she took that phrase, and it's part of teaching Torah. It's part of teaching Torah. Anyway, then we got into the car, and we went to Lancet, which is Rupshitz. The Rupshitz of Rebbe is buried there. And if we keep our heads on, the din of a Rebbe, which we have the next day, one of his sons is buried there as well. When I went there for the first few years ago, it was a place that had a huge Nazi symbol right outside of it. All the students used to go like unbelievable. And the tour guides would want to admit to this. They always say, it's a soccer team. They would never say, like, there's a Nazi soccer team or something. But right outside, now, this is the first time I went there in a few years, now they built a massive house 70 yards away. Hafnasa's Arfim house, unbelievable amount of food, guy cleaning it, bathroom, mikvah, it's unbelievable, beds and everything. And we went in, and I met this non-Jewish guy who was managing the place. I asked him, how'd you get this job? He was like, it's an act of God. I was walking down the street. This Jew, his name was Meisels, I think he said, from Williamsburg, was driving by. I was walking with my mother, an older guy, 50s, 60s for sure. And he said, do you want a job? You're looking on this guy. And I was like, I don't have a job. I'll take a job. And he said, okay, I'm building a building here. You're going to manage the building. That's what he said. But he took the job so seriously, that he's from Lancet. Lancet's the name of the town. We'll talk about it in a second. He's from Lancet. His family, his grandparents, and great-grandparents. And he decided to investigate part of the job. To investigate the history of the Jews in Lancet. What happened to the Jews? How were they taken out? Where were they killed? He memorized, since the Nazis took records, all the names of all the Jewish houses. He told me that about a year or two ago, a lady from Williamsburg, 96 years old, he told me the name was Fogel, still remember this, a Mrs. Fogel called him, and she said, I'm from Lancet. He said, you're from Lancet? Fogel, your address was? And he told her the address. He was very proud to tell me that. I said, you should be proud to tell me that. He was a nice guy, and he's running this thing. But that's just the Achnas Zarachim house, 70 feet away. Come back up to the grave. We have two people. So let's talk about the Rav Tzitzah. So the Rav Tzitzah, by the way, was we came from dynasty. I will tell you something specifically about him. I just have a picture here. I do have, I remember that we put that in because it's always a big thing. Now, we said last week as well, we spoke about it last week, that people, what they put on the tombstones is very, very serious. What they put on the tombstones, what they say at the graves, these are serious stuff. He wrote on his tombstone that I am a singular person in the area of Chochmas Elikim, which means knowledge of God. And that's what it says on the grave. I have it on my phone. What it says here is, I am, now he told this to the students. He told the students a bunch of things. And then he took back all of them and said, I'm only going to put one thing on. I have wisdom. I don't know if you get this on the phone clearly. This makes it bigger here.
It's okay. Okay.
I got the right one here. I'm going to put my finger on it. Yeah. Yachid Bedoyroi, singular in the generation of Chochmas Elikim. It became a big, famous question. What does that mean? So, Chaskel said correctly, and when we went to Rupchis on Matzah Shabbos, on our way to Legend, there was a Hasidish guy from Toronto, very knowledgeable person. And he said, he was talking very nice, and he said this idea, which I have said before, which Charles said right now, that the Rupchis was one of his jobs was a basket. I said anyway, he was a jokester at weddings. The Hasidim still do it today. They have a guy get up there and make jokes in the form of stories. It's very at Hasidic weddings. It was in Yiddish. And he was a famous bach.
But not to be really rude, not a roast, not like a roast.
No, no, good call. No, not a roast. And he was a famous person who was, they said that the Yochid B'Dayroi meant when he was talking about himself went in singular, he could do Wahagal Hav like Haman. We spoke in the past about a Haman talking to a king and talking to God. The Rav Tzitzah used to have normal conversations, but they're really deep concepts. And when he was making jokes, he really had massive concepts for him. When he was writing on his tombstone, this is what everyone says it meant. I was single in the generation of Chochmas Elikim. It meant that the ability to have double speak in a positive way. I mean, he's talking to his wife about cleaning the floor, but really he's talking about repenting over sins, as an example. In the Agada, he has a couple famous jokes, we'll say it. One of them is, why are there so many interpretations on the Agada? You don't have that many interpretations on the Gemara, on Chumash, on the Siddur. The Haggadah is endless. You can walk into an average religious guy's home to say he has 80 to 100, nothing. I myself, hundreds. People have in the thousands. Because everyone has an interpretation on the Haggadah. Almost every rabbi, if he didn't write one, at one point they collected from his writings and put it into one. Literally, you can walk into any Svar, and now it's in English as well. I mean, our school must have 10 or 15 verses. I don't even know myself. So his question was, why? Why the Agada? Remember, you're only going to look at it one night, outside of it, it's all two nights. When you're at the Seder, how much are you actually looking at the Agada? Let's be honest. You're not. You got a million things going on. So why would that be the thing? So his famous joke was because the Rasha, the evil son, comes to the Seder, and then next year he becomes the wise son. He writes an Agada. That was a joke. The evil son became wise. That sounds like you're not even so funny. But there's deep meaning to it. What it means is that when a person goes to the Seder, the power of that night is to turn someone from evil to wise. That's what he was really saying. It's a good joke. Oh, everyone wants to write a book now. That's what it sounds like. Everyone's writing a book now. What he meant was everyone that night had the potential to come over and write a book. He has another one. The end of the Agada in the songs. One of the songs is Adiru. I don't. So, and it's talking about attributes of God. And it goes in alphabetical order. Eight ches. Says chassid who? God is a chassid. So the Rav Tzitzah's famous question is, one of his joke, sarcastic, comical questions is, if we're going to sing the song at the end of the Seder, and we're going to write that God is a chassid, there's a famous debate in Chassidus versus non-Chassidim. When you say the Kaddish, there's an extra line in there. Have you ever noticed? That means that you should now create the redemption. That's a Chassidus, and the Ashkenaz doesn't say it. So his thing was, I don't understand something. If you read the Agada, and the Agada tells you God's a chassid, so how come God doesn't read that phrase and have the redemption come immediately? Since that phrase by Chassidim is that we should have a redemption. That the redemption will happen immediately. So again, it sounds like an odd thing, but there are deep-seated meanings behind it. Now, practically speaking, he had a person that almost became a student. You might have never heard of him. Author of a sefer called Minchas Chinuch. Heard of him?
That's your book.
So the original Minchas Chinuch went to the Rav Tzitzah. The Rav Tzitzah was a giant in regular learning besides Chassidus. What?
That's Babad.
Rabbi Yosef Babad. So he was a giant in regular. You should know that all the customs that came to Poland. Remember, as we spoke about last week, the Hasidus began in Russia and moved over. The name of the mouth brought it to Poland, and after that, it came these stewards. The Rapshitsa had a lot of interesting customs and opposing customs, some of them even say. Those customs became, in Galicia, what a lot of people took on. One of the most fascinating ones is the Rapshitsa. They make a shahakol on a potato, not a hadam. The only time they make an hadam on a potato, Pesach night. Because Pesach night, they're eating the potato because it's karpas, they make an hadam. But the rest of the year, eating potatoes, they make a shahakol. Very interesting. A lot is written on it, but not getting pulled out. That's Rapshitsa. He was actually born 1760 on Shavuos. People say that handing over the torch, the day the Baal Shem Tov died. The day the Baal Shem Tov died, the Rapshitsa people, I think one of his nicknames, and right here, was the second Baal Shem, based on that.
So I think he's not more well-known.
I'm not sure he's not well-known. I wouldn't say that, but why is he not?
Can I name one book he wrote?
Good point. I will say he was among the rebbes that said not to write over his Torah. Oh. And his Torah came out from one of the star students, Divrei Chaim of Sanz, which began the bubble of Kloisenberg dynasty, which is huge today. His student, the Divrei Chaim, who was Bromlos the Mechasanach, they were sort of students of Rapshitsa, and they put the stuff out. Now we're much of Shabbos. Now we're heading to Lezhensk. This is the yard to Lezhensk. I said about it a little bit last week. It was rocking. We got to remember, we went to Sarashnira, then we had a drive to Rapshitsa, then we were there a while with this person talking to us, then we went down the block over there. So we got to Lezhensk very late, and we were there for about 4 or 5 hours. It was Williamsburg at 8 p.m. The streets were hopping, police were there, announcements in Yiddish, Pelalskit, that's the phrase everyone says, it means everything should turn out for the good, everything is turning out for the good, depends how you say it, or everything turned out for the good, Pelalskit, and they're announcing it on the loudspeaker. I mean, you could hear it from a mile away. But as I said, the area around already has been purchased by Hasidim and all over, because that's the Rebbe of Melech. He's the original. He brought it to Poland. He's the Rebbe of all the Rebbes. That's why they call the Rebbe of Melech. The Chosim of the Blin, Mendel Rimanov, the Abderov, among his students, I wrote here, Apta, Choyza, Rimanov, these were his students, these are cousins of Maga, these are giants. And he created the concept, made famous the concept that one of the ways to get into heaven is to attach yourself to a tzaddik. That is this an automaton in some form? But he held that certain people on their own are not going to make it, but by attaching themselves, whatever that means in different people, different things, that's your green card into heaven. And he began that process which created a fight later in the Hasidic world that don't rely on that person, you got to do it yourself. That was part of the break off of what we spoke about last week with Pshischa. And this is much a Shabbos, it's seriously, it's rock. It was amazing. The experience here, I mean, I don't know how many people showed up at the end because it was 2 months this year of Adar, and he's the 21 Adar. Some people held the first, some held the second. But on the average year, when there's no wars going on in Russia, if that exists anymore, I mean, years ago, there were 35,000 people there. That's what they said. On the name of the Melis, the outside. But still good.
So is Zusha...
Jesus, continue on this path.
Is Zusha also over there or not?
Oh, and Zusha is his brother. The name of the Melech's famous brother, of Zusha, they all have these funny stories from. Again, these stories have deep meaning to most of them, just like people believe the old Disney stories of Havdol have some meaning for them. Yes, so his famous... Now, they, again, as I said last week, they didn't start out Hasidus because when they were born, there really wasn't Hasidus. These are early generations Hasidus. Same thing with the Rapshitsa. A lot of these people didn't begin in Hasidus. They came to it later. Now, it's the other way, but in the late 1700s, mid 1700s, and clearly 1800s, not happening. So now we're Matzah Shabbos. We go to a place. We got there at 5:30. And we left there at 8:30. Literally, put your head down and get back up. And then Sunday was a full day. First stop is Dinov. Now the Dinov is grandparents of the Munkacha, who's played pretty big, and there's a Dinov as well. And he was a nephew of the Nevi'im. Nephew of his. And he became a student, if you look at the names, the same name as the Nevi'im Melech's students. The Nevi'im Melech's famous students, the Chayza, the Kazuz, the Rimanova, they became the Rebbeim of the Nevi'im Melech, of the Dinova. The Dinova wrote an all-time, almost, I would say, I hate to use the phrase, but I'm just doing it for American audience, almost like a how-to on Yom Tov, or Yom Tov for dummies on some level. Not dummies at all, it's genius. But he wrote a very novel idea in the month of the year. So it has Shabbos, Yom Tov, and he starts, and it's called the B'nai Yisos, a very world-famous sefer. Probably all done in English already today. He also wrote an interpretation on the mitzvahs. He only got through the first 58 mitzvahs. How do I remember that? Because he lived 58 years. And he was a giant in many ways. He divided the mitzvah as well. All time class. The rumors are that when he died, he had a house full of manuscripts. He had written an encyclopedia. First, the mitzvahs only went to 58, obviously. He had an encyclopedia of Hasidus, like basically breaking it down to the bare minimum. And they claim he had a manuscripts, two floors. In Dinov, two floors, and we were not worthy enough of having it come out in the end. But that's how serious it was. And that was my first stop. Now, here are two as well. When I was 8 years ago, there was nothing going on. I'm going to go to the water of the graves now. It's easy. This is the middle of the night. What episode that I showed up last week, right? And here is a base of Medrash. They built, it's about a mile away, but you drive it. These are all in towns, middle of nowhere. They built an Achnas and Rav Mount that fits 300 people. That's a synagogue in that place with food galore. Amazing. You're in Europe as if it was 20 years ago, except it's much nicer. So you have running water. So you have a real bathroom. And that's about a mile. You have to drive it, but you're driving. And for Shabbos, because everyone was there on Shabbos, for them, off the outside Saturday night, much of Shabbos. So Shabbos, a lot of these towns that had these houses were jammed. So this place, when I got there, they told me, there were 300 plus people there on Shabbos, with more room to spare. After that, we crossed the border.
To what?
Into Hungary or Slovakia first, but that's the driving to go to Hungary. Brand new set of Hasidim. We went from, again, this is how Hasidim dynasty went. They went from Russia, across the pole, and then it started going down to Hungary. The one who brought it to Hungary was the first time we had, the Yisrael Achmoisha of Oyo. He is the dynasty of the Satmar Hasidim today. Heavily exists today. The Satmar Hasidim all come from the Yisrael Achmoisha. He was a giant. Also, began as regular Torah study. That's such a phrase, regular Torah study. But he was a non-Hasidic person. He got the Hasidus through his son-in-law. So it means he went, I mean, we can make our jokes, he got married at 17 back then, but I don't know when he got married, but he, it means he lived a portion of his life, I you could say anti-neutral, but not a chassid for sure. And then his son-in-law brought him in, and I think it says he brought him into the chayza. Again, the famous chayza, who was a student of Naimel Melech, who we called him the chayza, means he's the seer.
Of Lublin.
He saw everything. He was performing miracles on an hourly basis of visions. Chayzeman, he was able to see things that no one else saw. Again, we don't nickname people. I told you this a couple weeks ago. In Talmud time, if a person has a nickname, it's taken very, very, very seriously. We don't give out nicknames. Talmud discusses, is he a oiker? Does he uproot mountains or great mountains? And we called him the Chayzeman Lublin, the man who could see things. By the way, the famous story is that the Chayzeman on the first 12 days of Nisan, we're in the middle of that right now, first 12 days of Nisan, would sit down with his students. This is brought down right after he died. It's not written 5 years ago, but maybe not in his lifetime, but right after. Immediately after he died, this was being written. And they said the first 12 days of Nisan, he would predict all the events for the whole year. Day one was for the first month, day two for the next month, day three for the third month. And they claim that the last year of his life, when he was doing it, he stopped in the fifth month and he said, here it becomes godly. And they say some of the students realized what it meant. And they came, they lived in their towns, but they came back in the beginning of Av, fifth month, because they realized that's when it's ending, that's when he's going to godly, and that's when they came for the funeral. Now, he was also fighting, I've said this before, you liked at the time, when he was a Hasidic rabbi, and people didn't go for him, perform miracles, people just laugh at him. And I have a story in here about one of his students, we'll get to in a second. The famous joke was they told him he didn't like the way the burial society was acting. Different versions of a similar story. So he told him one time, listen, I'm gonna change systems. I'm gonna get all you out, bring in brand new people for the burial society. And they said to him, listen, and what were they doing wrong? They were eating, they were levity in front of a corpse. We believe that's a big thing. So when they said it to him, he famously responded, on my day, by me, no eating. And he died on Tisha B'Av. It's one of these stories. But they have stories of people showing up that month because of the five things. And there's a lot of great stories of them.
What's his actual name? Chosa of Lublin has a name.
It's the same name, by the way, as the Pshischa, who said it to me last week. So the first name I'm not sure now, it's Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yitzchak, something like that. Just had to say it. And he was the Chosmulin who, again, there was another thing I was saying before on the title that he saw. A lot of interesting stories the Chosmulin. Now, so the Chosmulin has a lot of interesting stories. He popularized Hasidus, again, a billion stories on his stuff. I have a cute one here by one of his star students, who I mentioned last week, I went to on Friday, was Fedor Breuss. He was a very unknown person. The Feder Brisa, I quoted a story in there. I forgot where I put it. What page is it? Not for that. I got a cute story that the Chayes used to fight with certain people. The Litvax, the Misnagdim had it out for the Chayes because he was doing odd stuff. So they had it out for him a little bit. But they didn't recognize that there was genius behind what he did. So the story I have in here is that his students, he sent two students to one of his people. What was the story? I'm trying to think. Oh, it's about the Agada. Okay, fine. So he sent two of his students over to one of his antagonists, and the Rebbe, they were talking and learning, and the anti guy told him, "Your students are so impressive. I don't understand something. Why is it that your Rebbe just says nonsense?" And he quoted one of the nonsense. This anti guy said, "I heard from your Rebbe this interpretation of a pasuk, and it's a complete distortion of the pasuk. I'm sorry, a complete distortion of the pasuk." So the student said to him, "Oh, thank you for telling me. We didn't ever heard the Rebbe say this. Let me tell you what he really meant." And they explained it brilliantly. And it's over here somewhere. I'm not going to look for now, right? Oh, here it is. Justin, if you want to get to it, Ben, page 21. Page 21 is that story. The Chayza sent two of his star students. Literally, if you would say this, possibly the interpretation, you would think almost as if the Chayza can't even read Hebrew. Every word in Hebrew, he's reading it poetically. But anyway, how do we get to Chayza? Now, so now we're by the Yitzhak Mosh. We're in oil. We're crossing to Hungary. Massive operation going on there as well. A house there, kitchen, food. Yisrael Moshe is a great dynasty. Again, still exists today because Yisrael Moshe started the Satmar dynasty. One of his main students was our next stop. That was Lisk. Not so famous today. Hard to find. I got some Torah from him. But I will say in Lisk is when we had that story, we came into Lisk. A lot of these places, they're locked up. I just leave it open. So we came to the place, there's no one around. We didn't have a phone call. Who are we calling? What are we doing here? And we're reading the sign. And the sign says in Yiddish, "Don't make noise. Don't desecrate God's name. Be respectful. Be quiet." And then it says the word oil. Oil means the
tent.
It's oil. And the guy with me was like, "Hey, wait a second. Oil is the combination. Aleph of the oil is press one. The word oil is the combination." And we got in. And then we get there in Yiddish. And I said to you, Costa last week, that it said in Yiddish, "Don't give money to the little kids asking for money." It's a funny thing to say. We're in the middle of nowhere. There's a place in the middle of nowhere. And as we pulled in also, and as we're pulling out, literally a woman and some little kid under the age of 5 came over to our car. I wouldn't say they were standing in front of the car, but too close for comfort, definitely slowing us down. And they were screaming the one word, universal language, "Money, money." Now, we had an argument. Chaspo's on my side. Are they asking for money because they're poor? Are they making fun of rich American Jews? But it was funny. On the sign, it said, "Don't do it." So it could be that these, I'm going to call them gypsies because that's what everyone else in the car thought they were. These gypsies are hanging around waiting for Americans to show up and get some money out. That was the next stop. And then we went over to the third place. We're still in Hungary. We want to do more? Karistia. Karistia today is a destination location. We're talking about restaurants. Again, I thought I was talking about houses, hundreds, mikvah. That's in the town. It's like full service. You can't imagine. Hundreds of people there. The Rebbe is buried on top of a mountain. There's a drive up there. Gorgeous. I might have taken a picture of the view. I don't know if I might have erased it. It was stunning up there. It's in wine country. What do you call that? Wine country. I have a few pictures there. It was gorgeous. Top of that, and happily, that cemetery, for some reason, was not destroyed. Overlooking, you can see for miles. It's beautiful. Mountains around. This is the one side going to Nam Mountain. Anyway, gorgeous stuff. Gorgeous stuff. Beautiful, beautiful area. And now the Karistia. Much, much later. You're looking at the dates here. Karistia is already born in 1850, died in 1925. That's modern history for what we're discussing here. Modern history. He was not a lot of Torah from him. Not a lot of Torah, but a lot of stories about his kindness. He excelled in the area of kindness. And there are some stories, and I have a couple in here as well. One story of kindness, when did I put it in here? It's fast, I'm telling you. I mean, again, you guys hopefully will get to read it anyway. You told me you're going to read it. Okay. Then, on Tuesday, we went to Warsaw. And Warsaw alone, as you can see, it's endless. It's 250,000 graves there. It's a city that was around for a couple hundred years. We're talking about all-star rabbis.
25% Jews or more, 30%
Jews. A lot of Jews, big cemetery. And we're talking about grand rabbis. There used to be a big city. They would come there because the doctors. They'd pass away, they'd be buried there. So when you get there, there's only a minor. You could literally spend, if you want to daven, days by holy rabbis. I'm only putting down here 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Six. I only put down 8 or 9 here. And I mean, you're not even getting close to anybody. Obviously, one of the highlights from the literature world is going to be Reb Chaim Brisker, buried next to his wife's grandfather, the Nativ. They're in the same oil. I have a picture over there. That's a classic. Hence, we named it. Doc knows from Shishlik of Volozhin.
What does Warsaw have to do with Volozhin?
The two grand rabbis from Volozhin are buried in a Warsaw oil among the 250,000 buried there. So, for example, the Chemda Shlem was the first chief rabbi of Warsaw. When he died, the whole Warsaw, Galim included, closed down. And that's in 1839. Okay? And then Yadir Maral, since it's famous, I've talked about him in the past. He's right after that. He's 1833. He's born later. Maral Tzintz was famous on his death, but he said, anyone who prints my Sfarim, good things will happen to him. He came for over 150 years. He wrote about 20, 30 volumes. I can't even tell you what he wrote. And people reprint them all the time. People are going through a tragic situation,
and
reprint them.
Things happen to them? How does that play
out? For a long time, that was happening. I don't want to say it was overused, Chas v'Shalom, but for a long time, it was a very big known school. We're talking about 100 years ago, known school.
So you wrote about him in this book right here?
I wrote, that's his name. I just wrote Tzitz, okay. And the guy was a student, and a couple of different retirements. The Varka Hasidus, which is a giant of Hasidus, doesn't really exist today, sadly say. The Slotim has someone buried there. Kotzka has someone buried there. Mudges has someone buried there. Radzimina is buried there. It's just an endless amount. That's besides the Rebbe's, of the Litvish people. Lots of Ger. Ger was located really around Warsaw. So Ger is a little bit further away, but a lot of the Ger relatives are buried there. And that's obviously a dynasty. We don't believe a bunch of them there. You have a tremendous amount. I didn't put them down there just for the laugh of the name, only because we shouldn't have said anything. Buried right next to the Chemda Shlema. It was like all the grand rabbis of Warsaw in the early 1800s. So it's the Chemda Shlema. And then there's the Maral Tzintz right there. And then Yaakov Gesundheit. I don't know if Gesundheit, when Gesundheit became Gesundheit as opposed to his name, could be worth investigating, but he was a giant in learning. There are a lot of superstars buried in Warsaw. In a way, you can't even do it in the amount of time you have. And the Nazis didn't destroy it. It was on the outside of the ghetto. I mean, there were mass graves there so during the war, mass graves there. And some non-religious, obviously, as well. But as far as the religious world goes, it's a huge place to be going, because almost every dynasty, I can't say almost that, but a lot of the dynasties have someone from the dynasty buried people. And okay, anyway, I did put this out now. Everyone in the class got one tonight. And we're hoping
that... Where can we get one? People that are watching tonight, where can they get a copy of this book?
Reach out to the website, RabbiHubbard.com. We didn't print extreme amounts.
Can we do second print?
But I will send the PDF. Why not? I will. If anyone reaches out, I'll send the PDF. Hopefully by next week, we're in Yerushalayim, eating from the carbon Pesach.
Amen.